Marge Potasek was searching for the purpose of her life and the truth that would tie everything together to make sense of what was taught and what was happening on our planet, the fire that was creating all the smoke. Through many experiences, she was finally led to the knowledge book that provided all the answers. She is now talking about this gift to humanity on Knowledge Book Radio, so all can be united in peace, love, and harmony. Please call 1-973-787-7035 or email mmjp99@gmail.com with questions. If you send your postal address to mmjp99@gmail.com, you will receive 3 chapters of the Knowledge Book as a gift. Now, here is your host, Marge Potasek.
Hello, everyone. I'm Marge Potasek, and you're listening to the Knowledge Book Radio with Marge Potasek on Transformation Talk Radio. For the next hour, as we have been for a while, we will continue our series of Omega Talks. Now, these are given once a month, usually on the fourth Tuesday of the month at 4 p.m. Pacific time and 7 p.m. East Coast time. And sometimes, like today, they're given on the last Tuesday of the month. Now, the Omega Talks are basically a part of the unification program of the Call to Friendship Association that's talked about in the Knowledge Book. What's happening during these talks is that we connect world knowledge to the Omega Dimension, otherwise known as the Union of Central Suns, or the 19th Dimension. And during the time that the talks are given in person, people receive special energies, or people receive special energies during the talks. Now, up until now, the 19th dimension has been closed to humanity. It has been inaccessible to the world human. However, for the first time, it is being opened to humanity through the Knowledge Book. These are special energies coming in from the 19th dimension that evolve us much more quickly and allow us to progress in our evolutionary journey. Now, the main website for the Knowledge Book is dkbdavidkiteboy-mevlana.org.tr. The United States website is usa.theknowledgebook.net. And of course, my number is 973-787-7035. And you can text me, or you could also email me, or call me actually, or email me at mmjp99@gmail.com. That's MaryMaryJohnPeter99@gmail.com. Now, the talk for this month, the information will be presenting and unifying with the Omega Dimension is the power of one. Now, there is a song, if some of you may remember, by Harry Nilsson, and it basically says, one is the loneliest number that you'll ever do. Two can be as bad as one. It's the loneliest number since the number one. No is the saddest experience you'll ever know. Yes, it is the saddest experience you'll ever know, because one is the loneliest number that you'll ever do. One is the loneliest number that you'll ever know. So basically, one, the number one, or a single individual, is sometimes seen as separate, lonely, powerless, disconnected, and ineffectual. But does this really describe really accurately and evaluate accurately the individual's impact on their environment? So what we'll be doing today is basically we'll be reviewing some lives to evaluate whether the song lyrics are a true representation of reality or not. So we'll start with Albert Einstein. Most people will recognize this name and recognize this face. He is best known for the equation E equals mc squared, which states that energy and mass, or matter, are the same thing, just in different forms. You could also think about mass and energy in the sense that energy compressed becomes mass. He is also known for his discovery of the photoelectric effect, for which he won the Nobel Prize in Physics in 1921. Einstein developed the theory of special and general relativity, which helped to complicate and expand upon theories that had been put forth by Isaac Newton over 200 years prior. A lifelong pacifist, he was one of the four intellectuals in Germany to sign a manifesto opposing Germany's entry into war. So this was a common, ordinary person who was born into a regular family. However, his impact on society, his impact on the world is tremendous. Then we have Nikola Tesla. He was a Serbian-American inventor, electrical engineer, mechanical engineer, and futurist, best known for his contributions to the design of the modern alternating current electricity supply system. So it is thanks to him that we're able to turn on our lights at home, turn on our machines, turn on our cell phone, turn on the television, anything and everything that we have working based on electricity is based on his electrical supply system, on the alternating current. Now, one of his most impressive products was the Adams Power Station, and this was the world's first hydroelectric power plant. This innovative powerhouse realized a long-held hope that the force of Niagara Falls could be harnessed. So the Tesla soil, the Tesla coil, radio, magnifying transmitter, induction motor, hydroelectric power, the shadowgraph were other of his inventions. So again, one individual having a humongous impact, not only on his own environment, but on the world. Then we have the Wright brothers. Orville and Wilbur Wright were American aviation pioneers generally credited with inventing, building, and flying the world's first successful motor-operated airplane. They made the first controlled, sustained flight of a powered, heavier-than-air aircraft with the Wright Flyer on December 17, 1903. That's only 120 years ago, and look how the world has changed since then. This was in Kitty Hawk, North Carolina. And they were also the first to invent aircraft controls that made fixed-wing powered flight possible. So when you think about the 18th century, 19th century, you think about steamships traveling the oceans, maybe trains traveling within the confines of a country or going across intercontinentally or between cities. However, once the airplane was invented, people could fly distances that would take 6 months, 7 months sometimes when traveling in a ship. So these brothers made the world that much smaller because now you can go to the opposite side of the world in a matter of 24 hours or maybe 28 hours. Huge impact. Then there's Benjamin Franklin. He was an American polymath, and this is an individual whose knowledge spans a substantial number of subjects, known to draw on complex bodies of knowledge to solve specific problems. He was an active as a writer, a scientist, an inventor, a statesman, a diplomat, printer, publisher, and political philosopher. Among the leading intellectuals of his time, Franklin was one of the founding fathers of the United States, a drafter and signer of the Declaration of Independence, and the first Postmaster General. Now, as a scientist, he was a major figure in the American Enlightenment and the history of physics for his studies in electricity and for charting and naming the Gulf Stream Current. So he basically saw that there was a river within an ocean, within the Atlantic Ocean. Not only did he name it, but he basically said, this is where it comes, this is where it turns right, this is where it turns left. And was able to, now people are able to either avoid or use that current to travel the seas. He was an inventor. He is known for the lightning rod, bifocals, and the Franklin stove, among others. He founded the Library Company, that was Philadelphia's first fire department, and the University of Pennsylvania. As the first U.S. ambassador to France, He exemplified the emerging American nation. Franklin was foundational in defining the American ethos as a marriage of the practical values of thrift, hard work, education, community spirit, self-governing institutions, and opposition to authoritarianism, both political and religious, with the scientific and tolerant values of the Enlightenment. So he had his fingers in many pies and was instrumental in helping the development of a country, helping the development of humans. Mahatma Gandhi. He was an Indian lawyer, anti-colonial nationalist, and political ethicist who employed nonviolent resistance to lead the successful campaign for India's independence from British rule. He inspired movements for civil rights and freedom across the world. So he is known for his peaceful resistance, that you can win a war by not taking up guns, by not taking up physical warfare. Tenzin Gyatso, or the 14th Dalai Lama. The Dalai Lama advocates for the welfare of Tibetans and since the entry early 1970s has called to peacefully resolve the issue of Tibet. Now he travels worldwide to give to Tibetan Bhutanist teachings, and his teachings become international events. He attends conferences on a wide range of subjects, including the relationship between religion and science. He meets with other world leaders, religious leaders, philosophers, and scientists online and in person. His work includes focus on the environment, economics, women's rights, nonviolence, interfaith dialogue, physics, astronomy, Buddhism, and science, cognitive neuroscience, reproductive health, and sexuality. He was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in 1989 and the U.S. Congressional Gold Medal in 2006. Time magazine named the Dalai Lama one of the children of Mahatma Gandhi and Gandhi's spiritual heir to nonviolence. I know him especially because he is the person who supports and brings religion and science together, where he, excuse me, where he actually promotes scientific approach to meditation, where people who are meditators are scientifically studied, their brainwaves are studied, and the effects on the physical constitution of that meditator are documented. Siddhartha Gautama, otherwise known as the Buddha, was a wandering ascetic and religious teacher who lived in South Asia during the 6th or 5th century and founded Buddhism. Now, according to Buddhist tradition, he was born in what is now known as Nepal to royal parents of the Shakya clan, but renounced his home life to live as a wandering ascetic. Now, most of the individuals we've covered so far were regular human beings, not royalty. This is royalty. He was born into royalty and wealth, but he gave that up to lead a life of begging, asceticism, and meditation. He attained enlightenment at Bodh Gaya in what is now India. And the knowledge book tells us in fascicle 12 that he was the first human to reach God. The Buddha then wandered, teaching and building a monastic order. He taught a path to nirvana, or freedom from ignorance, craving, rebirth, and suffering. His teachings are summarized in the Noble Eightfold Path, a training of the mind that includes ethical training and meditative practices, such as restraint, kindness towards others, and mindfulness. So this practice is currently being done in many countries of the world, and many have reached success in becoming more calm and happier. Then comes Milarepa. Now, this gentleman was born in Western Tibet to a prosperous family. However, his father died, and his uncle took over the father's wealth. His mother was very upset at this and told her son to go study sorcery to take revenge on the uncle. So he actually was very successful and he harmed many people. Later, he regretted his harmful actions and became a student of Marpa. Now, this was a meditation teacher. Now, before Marpa would teach Milarepa, however, he had him undergo many trials, such as building and then demolishing three towers. Marpa asked Milarepa to build one final 9-story tower, which still stands. And you're seeing this in the top portion of the figure. This is the Milarepa's tower. And Marpa then later explained that the trials purified Milarepa's negative karma. So Milarepa is an example of being able to achieve enlightenment in one lifetime despite previous major wrongdoings. So see, his work caused the death of many people. Now, he is seen and depicted as in green because he lived in a cave on the mountainside. And what he had to eat was only nettles, and the nettles colored his skin. So in case you're thinking you have lots of hardships along the way when you're living, just know that just like in Milarepa's life, all of us are undergoing hardships to pay back our karmas. Leonardo da Vinci was an Italian polymath of the high resistance, who was active as a painter, draftsman, engineer, scientist, theorist, sculptor, and architect. While his fame initially rested on his achievement as a painter, if you remember the Mona Lisa, that was his creation, he also became known for his notebooks, in which he made drawings and notes on a variety of subjects, including anatomy, astronomy, botany, cartography, painting, and paleontology. Leonardo is widely regarded to have been a genius who epitomized the Renaissance humanist ideal, and his collective works comprise a contribution to later generations of artists, matched only by that of his younger contemporary Michelangelo. And many of you may know that some of his sketches include the notes of how to build, or what the theory of the helicopter or flight. Now, here's another big guy, Sir Isaac Newton. He was an English mathematician, physicist, astronomer, alchemist, theologian, and author who was described in his time as a natural philosopher. He was a key figure in the scientific revolution and the Enlightenment that followed. His pioneering book, Philosophiae Naturalis Principia Mathematica, or Mathematical Principles of Natural Philosophy, first published in 1687, consolidated many of his previous results and established classical mechanics. Newton also made seminal contributions to optics and shares credit with German mathematician Gottfried Wilhelm Leibniz for his development of infinitesimal calculus. So anyone who's sitting in calculus class has him to thank for the calculations they are producing and the answers they are producing using that method. Now, in the Principia, Newton formulated the laws of motion and universal gravitation that formed the dominant scientific viewpoint for centuries, until it was superseded by the theory of relativity. So Einstein knocked out some of the work and some of the theoretical constructs that represented the motion of the bodies in space. Now, Newton also used his mathematical description of gravity to derive Kepler's laws of planetary motion. He accounted for tides, the trajectories of comets, the precession of the equinoxes, and other phenomena, eradicating doubt about the solar system's heliocentricity. With prevailing philosophy prior to Newton and prior to others before him, was that the Earth is flat, number one, and that everything revolves around the Earth. The sun revolves around the Earth. The planets revolve around the Earth. The moon revolves around the Earth. Everything that's seen in the sky, whether at night or in the day, was attributed to their motion around the Earth, with Earth being the center. Well, in came in individuals like Newton, like Copernicus, who said, or like Galileo, that said, nope, that's not how it works. It's us who go around the sun, and we are going through space, and the planets are going through space in their own particular orbits around the sun. So the Earth is not the center of the universe. It is one of many bodies in space that travel around the sun and that travel in galaxies. Now, there are a tremendous amount of machines that were put into place that tried to demonstrate all the motions that the moon goes through, the planets go through in the night sky, but none of them actually successful to really depict what was going on. He demonstrated that the motion of objects on Earth and celestial bodies could be accounted for by the same principles. Newton's inference that the Earth is an oblate spheroid was later confirmed by the geodesic measurements of Mauritius, Lacandamine, and others, convincing most European scientists of the superiority of Newtonian mechanics over earlier systems. So based on Newtonian depictions of motion and gravity, they were able to predict where the moon will be, where the sun will be, where the planets will be, because of their motion, because of their planetary position and motion in space. He built the first practical reflecting telescope and developed a sophisticated theory of color based on the observation that a prism separates white light into the colors of the visible spectrum. His work on light was collected in his highly influential book, Optics, published in 1704. He also formulated an empirical law of cooling, made the first theoretical calculation of the speed of sound, and introduced the notion of a Newtonian fluid. So again, he was a big guy. He became a knight. He was knighted by the king, I guess, but he was not initially of royalty or in the upper class. Then comes Charles Darwin. He was an English naturalist, geologist, and biologist. He is widely known for his contributions to evolutionary biology. His proposition that all species of life have descended from a common ancestor is now generally accepted and considered a fundamental concept in science. In a joint publication with Alfred Russel Wallace, he introduced his scientific theory that this branching pattern of evolution resulted from a process he called natural selection, in which the struggle for existence has a similar effect to the artificial selection involved in selective breeding. So if you want to strengthen a particular trait in, let's say, a cat or a dog or a cow or a pig, you basically breed those individuals who have that trait, and you breed them together. So that trait is strengthened and becomes higher in the genetic code of that individual. So in this way, you could make eventually from a golden flower, a flower that is yellow, to eventually become a flower that is white by selectively crossbreeding the lighter and the lightest of the light for that particular season, and continuing that for a while, and eventually you'll arrive at a white flower. He was described as one of the most influential figures in human history and was honored by burial in Westminster Abbey. Jane Goodall. Now, she, of course, was a baroness, so she comes in from the upper crust. And she is an English primatologist and anthropologist. She is considered the world's foremost expert on chimpanzees after 60 years of studying the social and family interactions of wild chimpanzees. Goodall first went to the Gombe Stream National Park in Tanzania in 1960, where she witnessed human-like behaviors amongst chimpanzees. She is the founder of the Jane Goodall Institute and the Roots and Shoots program, and she has worked extensively on conservatism, conservation, and animal welfare issues. As of 2022, she's on the board of the Non-Human Rights Project. In April of 2002, she was named a UN Messenger of Peace. Goodall is an honorary member of the World Future Council. I just remember her as the person who introduced the idea that chimpanzees can use tools, which was only reserved for humans. So that characteristic was from at that point attributed only to humans. But chimpanzees were also doing this. Louis Pasteur was a French chemist and microbiologist renowned for his discoveries of the principles of vaccination, microbial fermentation and pasteurization, the last of which was named after him. So when we buy milk now, it is usually pasteurized milk, and we owe that to him. This process basically killed the bacteria that could cause us diseases, and we have him to thank for that. His research in chemistry led to the remarkable breakthroughs in the understanding of the causes and prevention of diseases, which laid down the foundation of hygiene, public health, and much modern medicine. So previously to him, women would die in labor because there was no hygiene present, so whatever germ was around infected the women who were in a weakened state, and many of them died during childbirth. He is also credited with saving millions of lives through the vaccine development of the rabies and anthrax vaccine, and it is one of the founders of modern bacteriology. So again, tremendous impact on the number of people that survived diseases because of the vaccinations. And the fact that he brought in hygiene, that he brought in sterilization, and that allowed, again, countless people to survive where they normally would have succumbed to the disease. Johannes Gutenberg was a German inventor and craftsman that introduced letterpress printing to Europe with his movable type printing press. Though not the first of its kind, there were others who produced this kind of printing press. The earlier designs were actually restricted to East Asia, but Gutenberg's version was the first to spread across the world. His work led to the information revolution and the unprecedented mass spread of literature throughout Europe. It had a direct impact on the development of the Renaissance, Reformation, and humanist movement, as all of which have been described as unthinkable without Gutenberg's invention. What would the world be without books? We store knowledge in books. We are able to go research and figure out how people thought during different times, because those thoughts are imprinted in books. Now, his many contributions to printing include the invention of a process for mass producing movable type, the use of oil-based ink for printing books, adjustable molds, mechanical movable type, and the use of wooden printing press. Prior to this, the books were a very precious commodity because they were handwritten and hand-painted, and it took a tremendous amount of time and effort to produce those books by hand. Gutenberg automated this process, and a lot more knowledge and information could be produced in a much shorter time, and that knowledge could be then spread to anyone who would want one, whether they purchased it or they rented it out in a public library. So again, a tremendous impact on society and on the world, one individual. Henry Ford. Now, he was an American industrialist and business magnate. He was the founder of Ford Motor Company and the chief developer of the assembly line technique of mass production. Ford created the first automobile that middle-class Americans could afford, and his conversion of the automobile from an expensive luxury into an accessible conveyance profoundly impacted the landscape of the 20th century. So this is a guy who thought of the assembly line. Previously, whatever machine was produced, whatever mechanical system was produced, it was produced by one individual, maybe one or two individuals working, and each one of them was doing different things, and in the end, they produced whatever machine that they were producing. He broke down that system where one individual had one responsibility, or maybe two responsibilities, in putting something together. So he split up the work, he divided the work among many, and each person, as the machine was going down the assembly line, would put his or her part that they were responsible for, and in the end, a complete machine was finished at the end of the assembly line. Now, he was the one that introduced the Model T Ford, and this car revolutionized both transportation and American industry. As the Ford Motor Company sole owner, he became one of the richest and best-known people in the world. He was credited with Fordism, the mass production of inexpensive goods coupled with high wages for workers. He was also among the pioneers of the five-day work week, and the global vision was consumerism as the key to peace. So, again, he believed in paying his workers, and where only the rich were allowed or could afford to own cars, now everyone could afford a car, or at least a Model T, and they were able to travel and quickly between places, and again, a humongous impact by one individual. Alexander Fleming was a Scottish physician and microbiologist, best known for discovering the world's first broadly effective antibiotic substance, which he named penicillin. His discovery in 1928, which is about maybe 100 years ago, of what was later named benzylpenicillin or penicillin G, from mold is described as the single greatest victory ever achieved over disease. For this discovery, he shared the Nobel Prize in Physiology or Medicine in 1945 with Howard Florey and Ernst Boris Chain. He also discovered the enzyme lysozyme in 1922, and along with it, a bacterium now known as Micrococcus luteus. So again, humongous impact. How many of us have already been taking antibiotics to help us get over an infection, help us get over some kind of a disease based on bacteria, where the bacteria is the causing agent for the disease? René Descartes was a French philosopher, scientist, and mathematician, widely considered a seminal figure in the emergence of modern philosophy and science. Mathematics was central to his method of inquiry. He connected the previously separate fields of geometry and algebra into analytic geometry. Descartes spent much of his working life in the Dutch Republic, initially serving the Dutch State's army, later becoming a central intellectual of the Dutch Golden Age. In his natural philosophy, he differed from previous schools on two major points. First, he rejected the splitting of corporeal substance into matter and form. Second, he rejected any appeal to final ends, divine or natural, by explaining natural phenomena. In his theology, he insists on the absolute freedom of God's act of creation. Refusing to accept the authority of previous philosophers, he frequently set his views apart from the philosophers who preceded him. He is known for incorporating and using the scientific method. We're arriving at a conclusion following specific steps to arrive, logical steps to arrive at that conclusion. Marco Polo. When I think of Marco Polo, I think of spices. I think of the foods that we have or the spices we have in our cabinets, in our kitchens, because he's the one that basically brought some of them back to the rest of the world. So he was an Italian merchant, explorer, and writer from the Republic of Venice who traveled through Asia along the Silk Road in the last quarter of the 13th century. His travels are recorded in the Travels of Marco Polo that describe to Europeans the then mysterious culture and inner workings of the Eastern world, including the wealth and great size of the Mongol Empire and China in the Yuan dynasty, giving their first comprehensive look into China, Persia, India, Japan, and other Asian cities and countries. The account of his travels in the Orient provided the Europeans with a clear picture of the Earth's geography and ethnic customs and was the first Western record of porcelain, gunpowder, paper money, and some Asian plants and exotic animals. So for Europe and the West, the Far East, or the Orient, as it was known, basically was a mystery. Nobody knew what it looked like, what people did there, what people looked like there. And so he was the one that traveled and wanted to trade. And therefore, he traveled and brought back these exotic, then exotic substances from the Far East. Alan Turing. He was an English mathematician, computer scientist, logician, cryptanalyst, philosopher, and theoretical biologist. Turing was highly influential in the development of theoretical computer science, providing a formalization of the concepts of algorithm and computation with the Turing machine, which can be considered a model of a general purpose computer. He is widely considered to be the father of theoretical computer science and artificial intelligence. So right now, most of us own a cell phone, most of us own a laptop, most of us own a computer. Computers are the driving force behind many of the things we do today. Where previously cars were mechanical in nature, now they are becoming more and more computerized, so they drive our cars, and computers are everywhere. So talk about impact of computing and computer science. And now, of course, with the more prominent idea of our artificial intelligence, where the machine is learning as it is being used and then improves itself to make sure that the task it produces, the task it's responsible for, is produced better and more quickly and logically. So again, we have him to thank for that, one individual. Louis Braille was a French educator and the inventor of a reading and writing system named Braille after him. And this is intended for use by visually impaired people. His system is used worldwide and remains virtually unchanged to this day. He received a scholarship to France's Royal Institute for Blind Youth, where he began to develop a system of tactile code that will allow blind people to read and write quickly and efficiently. Inspired by a system invented by Charles Barbier, Braille's new method was more compact and lent itself to a range of uses, including music. He presented his work to his peers for the first time in 1824 when he was 15 years old. So amazing. And right now, people with impaired vision can get on an elevator and know which floor that they wanted to go to because there is Braille everywhere. Hippocrates, now we're going back to the Greeks, was a Greek physician of the classical period who is considered one of the most outstanding figures in the history of medicine. He is traditionally referred to as the father of medicine in recognition of his lasting contributions to the field, such as the use of prognosis and clinical observation, the systematic categorization of diseases, or the formulation of humoral theory. The Hippocratic School of Medicine revolutionized ancient Greek medicine, established it as a discipline distinct from other fields with which it had traditionally been associated, thus establishing medicine as a profession. He is credited with coining the Hippocratic Oath, which is still relevant and in use today. I think the first precept is do no harm. Mustafa Kemal Atatürk was a Turkish field marshal, revolutionary statesman, author, and the founding father of the Republic of Turkey, serving as its first president. He undertook sweeping progressive reforms, which modernized Turkey into a secular, industrializing nation. The UN, in its resolution to Atatürk's centennial, stated that he was a remarkable promoter of the sense of understanding between peoples and durable peace between the nations of the world, and that he worked all his life for the development of harmony and cooperation between peoples without distinction. As the president of the newly formed Turkish Republic, Atatürk initiated a rigorous program of political, economic, and cultural reforms with the aim of building a modern, progressive, and secular nation state. He made primary education free and compulsory, opening thousands of new schools all over the country. He also introduced a Latin-based Turkish alphabet. Turkish women received equal civil and political rights during his presidency. Due to his accomplishments, he is regarded as one of the most important political leaders of the 20th century. So it is thanks to him that the women in Turkey can get educated, that they can hold the same position as men, that they are equal in standing as far as the government is concerned, and they have the right to vote. Nelson Mandela. He was a South African anti-apartheid activist and politician who served as the first president of South Africa from 1994 to 1999. He was the country's first black head of state and the first elected in a fully representative democratic election. His government focused on fostering racial reconciliation. He was an African nationalist and socialist and served as the president of the African National Congress Party from 1991 to 1997. His administration retained its predecessor's economic liberal framework despite his own socialist beliefs and introduced measures to encourage land reform, combat poverty, and expand health care services. Mandela became an elder statesman who focused on combating poverty and HIV/AIDS through the charitable Nelson Mandela Foundation. He is globally regarded as an icon of democracy and social justice and received more than 250 honors, including the Nobel Peace Prize. Again, one individual, huge effect, reconciliation, racial reconciliation in South Africa. Bertrand Russell. Right Honorable Bertrand Arthur William Russell, the third Earl Russell, so he came in as a peer. Peer meaning a royal standing, was a British mathematician, philosopher, logician, and public intellectual. He had a considerable influence on mathematics, logic, set theory, linguistics, artificial intelligence, cognitive science, computer science, and various areas of analytic philosophy, especially philosophy of mathematics, philosophy of language, epistemology, the theory of knowledge, especially with regard to its methods, validity, and scope, and metaphysics. Russell's contribution established him as one of the foremost philosophers of the 20th century. To the general public, however, he is best known as a campaigner for peace and as a popular writer on social, political, and moral subjects. Actually, Bertrand Russell is mentioned in the Knowledge Book as being part of the road and the path to the Golden Age and of the Golden Age. Martin Luther King Jr. So he was a civil rights leader, was one of the most prominent figures in the 20th century. He was a minister who fought for racial equality and is best known for his I Have a Dream speech at the 1963 March on Washington. His legacy lives on through his modeling of peaceful resistance and his speeches that developed that helped shape the world's views about fight for equality. So everyone is equal in the light of God, in the eyes of God. And again, you get there through peace, not through war, not through fighting, not through force. So he epitomizes peaceful resistance and equality of everyone. Now we're coming to a more recent individuals. Malala Yousafzai is a Pakistani activist who, while a teenager, spoke out publicly against the prohibition on the education of girls that was imposed by the Pakistani Taliban. She gained global attention when she survived an assassination attempt at age 15. In 2014, Yousafzai and Kailash Satyarthi were jointly awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in recognition of their efforts on behalf of children's rights. So again, now we have a woman, and again, impact on society. Greta Thunberg became well known after she protested outside the Swedish parliament in 2018 when she was 15. She held a sign saying "School Strike for Climate" to pressure the government to meet carbon emissions targets. Her small campaign had a her small campaign had a global effect, however, inspiring thousands of young people across the world to organize their own strikes. By December 2018, more than 20,000 students from the UK to Japan had joined her by skipping school to protest. A year later, she received the first of three Nobel Peace Prizes, actually Nobel Peace Prize nominations for climate activism. So you don't have to be a man, you don't have to be old to be have an effect. She was 15, she was a teenager, yet her protest, allergy season, throat is dry. So she inspired other youths to protest and to pay it for the government to pay attention and follow conservation rules and environmental rules. Armida Hosseini is an advocate for financial and economic education for youth, as well as an entrepreneur, writer, and public speaker. In 2020, at age 16, she published her first book, A Roadmap to Financial Literacy, An Introduction to Personal Finance for Teenagers. She partnered with the nonprofit Operation Economics International to donate 300 copies of the book to underserved schools in San Marcos, California. As the founder of Empower Econ, Hosseini has hosted three virtual three-day financial literacy camps and one entrepreneurship camp for over 300 teens from 36 countries across five continents. Again, you could be a teenager and have world impact. Rumi was a 13th century poet, Islamic scholar, theologian, and Sufi mystic originally from Greater Iran. Rumi's influence transcends national borders and ethnic divisions. His poems have been widely translated into many of the world's languages and transposed into various formats. I think the current total is 28 different languages have the Mesnevi be translated into. Rumi has been described as the most popular poet and the best-selling poet in the United States. His works are written mostly in Persian, but occasionally he also used Turkish, Arabic, and Greek. His Mesnevi, composed in Konya, is considered one of the greatest poems of the Persian language and has currently been translated to 26 languages. So what we've been covering is the tip of the tip of the tip of the tip of the iceberg. These are just so few of the individuals have had effect on humanity, have had effect on the world. We skipped over people like Princess Diana, Mother Teresa, Pope John Paul II, Mozart, Beethoven, Tchaikovsky, Rachmaninoff, Salvador Dali, Michelangelo, Monet, Manet, Van Gogh, Picasso, Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, Aristotle, Plato, Socrates, Cleopatra, Julius Caesar, Tutankhamun, Moses, Muhammad, and Jesus Christ, and so many others who have made a major impact on their environment and on the world. So do you ever wonder what the current world would look like if all these high-impact beings were alive today? In Fascicle 15, it states, quote, "The sages and prophets of the past periods and friends who gain a success at an advanced level in the past are living on your planet by gene transfers in this period of sincerity that is called the period of resurrecting, end quote. So all those beings who reached high levels are here now. So the world, with having all those beings reincarnated and being born again in this lifetime, the world would look exactly as it does now. All the high beings are incarnated in this world right now. When we look around, we are looking at those beings. However, we are born with a veiled awareness. We do not know who we are. Some of us do remember some of our past lives, or others may recognize us and may tell us, but that is not certain information. What is certain is that each one of us has been incarnated to perform a specific mission, whether positive or negative, a specific job that we had promised to do before we came here. It is not the past that's important, but the future we are creating through our actions in the present. So we are here surrounded by amazing humans who are here in disguise, who are here in regular dress and regular folks, but who actually were amazing humans in their past lives and are still amazing humans in current lives, except they are not recognized as such because there are different standards of recognition in the world, which is in the third dimension. So our mission, and we are here to basically evolve, and we are here with the mission to disseminate the knowledge book. We are here to unify as a totality at the frequency of Mevlana as presented in Fascicle 55. Quote, the totality will be a totality that will be loving, patient, tolerant, forgiving, who will be able to place his or her enemy over his or her head like a crown, and who will not have any adverse thought about anyone, including his or her own self. There is no limit here. Self-sacrifice, faith, love, patience, genuine mission consciousness, that is the serious adoption of the mission, are the matters in question in this operational ordinance. So each one of us had a mission in the previous lives. Maybe we were the king in one lifetime, the pauper in the next lifetime, a murderer in one lifetime, and being the one being killed in another lifetime. We have experienced all sides of the same coin. We have all gone through all the experiences that are to go through. And if there is anything that we are still lacking, if there's still anything that we haven't compensated for in terms of karma, we are doing that right now. And we are being helped through the knowledge book, because the knowledge book has the power to give us the energies, give us the frequency to fill in the missing blanks of our magnetic field. In Fascicle 53, it says, quote, cosmic influences evolve a person even without any effort. However, this evolution takes a very long time period. For example, an evolution that would be rendered in 10 years by this means can be decreased to a period of 2 years through the knowledge book. For this very reason, due to the scarcity of time, those who read the knowledge book enter a very accelerated evolution, and if they have karma deficiencies, these deficiencies are completed in the shortest possible time, and they make consciousness progresses by attaining through the events they will experience, and thus they will be accepted for salvation, end quote. So we don't have to build Milarepa's tower. We don't have to destroy that tower and build that tower again. We don't have to go through humongous physical effort and physical hardship to be able to evolve and go through trials to be able to become, to reach nirvana, to be saved. We are given, starting with 1900, cosmic energies, if we go through cosmic influence fields, and those cosmic energies can evolve a person just by sitting, just by doing nothing really, without any kind of an effort. However, it takes a long time. So this evolution is accelerated in the knowledge book and through the knowledge book. So instead of being given cosmic energies for 10 years, that amount of energy is being given to us in a matter of 2 years. In Fascicle 36, quote, Moses is the dimension of consciousness and knowledge. Mevlana is the emissary of the reality. His name in the final evolution dimension was Jalaluddin Irumi. And her present name is Vedia Bulin Unsu Chirac, carrying a frequency totality equivalent to the symbol of humanity. Through the coding ciphers of this name, the entire universal totality is represented, end quote. So, Mevlana is a name that was given to Rumi, and actually Mevlana in the dictionaries is called the servant of God. He was incarnated in the 13th century and gave the Misnavi to us. And currently she is incarnated in Turkey as Vedia Bulut Unsu Çorak. And she is the one through which the knowledge book has been given to humanity. So he is now a she, and her responsibility is to disseminate the knowledge book everywhere. However, in Fiscal 50, it says, quote, however, the knowledge book is being dictated on your planet to our universal friend, your sister who lives among you, by the name Vedia Bulin Unsu Çorak, in connection with the Alpha Center Archive, the channel of the Lord that is the single source. This sister of yours is a celestial friend of ours who once lived in Anatolian Turkey in the form of Mevlana Celaleddin İrumi. And this friend has always been transferred to your planet in various periods, in various forms, and has always helped you. And here's the kicker, Fascicle 55, quote, now for us, each one of you is a Mevlana, and you will tread just like dear Mevlana, this universal path she treads, and thus will shed light on humanity on the path of knowledge book, and will form the universal aura totality of the book, end quote. So each one of us has a mission. Each one of us is expected to do the work of a Mevlana in disseminating the knowledge book, in disseminating the knowledge of the truth that's in the knowledge book, and to have other individuals join us. So that's all she wrote for today. Turkish website, www.dkb-mevlana.org.tr. U.S. website, usa.theknowledgebook.net. My telephone number, 973-787-7035. And email address, mmjp99@gmail.com. Thank you. All the best. And bye-bye.
You've been listening to Knowledge Book Radio with Marge Potasik. Marge was led to the Knowledge Book, a gift to humanity at its time of transition to the Golden Age that provides the truth, energies, and knowledge. Now, she shares information from and answers questions about the Knowledge Book with you the fourth Tuesday each month at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information, visit usa.theknowledgebook.net and tune in next time for another amazing show on Knowledge Book Radio.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.